Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Beyond Black History Month. I'm your host, Fahmy Redwood. This week is all about dolls. Whether you call it a doll or an action figure, it's only been in recent years where parents could go to almost any store and likely find one that looks like their child. While G.I. Joe's first black action soldier came out in 1965 and Mattel's first black Barbie came out in 67, black dolls were few and far between at most stores. Despite the lack of representation on the retail side, these symbols of childhood have played incredible roles throughout time. During the antebellum period, they were used to help fight against slavery, and later during Jim Crow, they were used to help end school segregation. Today, black dolls empower black children who see themselves in their toys, and black handcrafted dolls bring a much-needed inclusivity into the art world. But black dolls also carry a paradoxical existence, like the ways they were used to reinforce the harmful mammy stereotype, a relic from Old South nostalgia that still exists today. To fully understand, we begin at the New York Historical Society Museum.
My name is Dominique Jean-Louis. I am Associate Curator for History Exhibitions at the New York Historical Society.
And Dominique is the co-creator of the Black Dolls exhibit.
The second you bring up dolls, people, automatically it comes to mind, oh, I had a doll like that, or oh, I have this doll I love so much.
The exhibit explores handcrafted dolls made during the periods of slavery through Jim Crow. These dolls are not the racist caricatures typically associated with those periods. These are intentionally made, mostly by African-American women, sometimes for their own children, and sometimes for the white children they took care of. The exhibit looks at the intersection of history, race, and gender by pairing dolls to what was happening at that time.
1850s through 1940s is a particularly troubling time in American history, filled with entrenched racism, legalized segregation, slavery, and so looking at these dolls as witnesses to that history, you can start to get a sense of all that the country's been through over the course of their making and survival.
Many of these doll makers used whatever leftover material was available, each doll carrying its own personal story, each thread and each stitch, an unspoken essay to the maker's strength and resilience. Like Harriet Jacobs, who was born into slavery in 1813 but later escaped.
And as part of her escape, she hid for years in this crawl space in her grandmother's attic. It was 9 feet by 7 feet, was only 3 feet tall, you couldn't even stand up, and she hid there for years.
Bored and miserable, but also a mom.
Her children couldn't know she was hiding for fear they'd give away the secret. And so she couldn't be with her children, but she could see them through a little hole that was carved in the wall. And so she basically is watching her children grow up without her, which is unthinkably painful. And alone in there for all of those hours in the day, one of the things she would do is sew. She was a remarkably talented seamstress.
She eventually escapes to the north. Jacobs begins working for a family and taking care of their kids. Using skills she perfected while hiding, she was able to make dolls for her employer's children. Three survived and can be seen at the museum. Jacobs later wrote the book, The Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl. It was published in 1861 and detailed her life and the lives of enslaved women, including the sexual abuse they faced.
An extraordinarily taboo subject in the antebellum United States, and she writes quite fearlessly about it.
Jacobs used her writing as a way to appeal, especially to white women in the North, to truly think about the evils of slavery.
It's one thing to know Harriet Jacobs' story and to really reckon with the impossible difficulty she faced, and then her incredible achievement in writing this book and sharing her story. But these dolls help us see that she was a creative spirit in so many other ways. She had so many talents. We know her as a writer. She was clearly a very gifted seamstress and a gifted creative expressive person through her needlework. And at least for me, I can't help thinking every time I see those dolls, what else she would have been capable of. There's so many stories we'd like to know and we don't know.
You know those t-shirts that are like, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams? That's what comes to mind meeting Cosby A. Cabrera.
So I did have some chocolate dolls.
The artist makes beautiful, black, handcrafted cloth dolls that sell for thousands of dollars.
And they're made out of linens and tissue linens. And I'm still using those materials. And then I've loaded them up with story and detail.
She started making dolls while living in Brooklyn and working as a very successful design director at Sony Music. Cosby would go to antique shows, but the only black doll she saw felt like racist tropes.
Show after show, what caught my eye were the black dolls that I saw, except that I was feeling a bit dejected by the narrative that they were stringing, because a lot of the dolls from antiquity were not necessarily made out of love. Oftentimes, they were entirely gross stereotypes.
This didn't sit well with her.
My feeling walking out of there time and time again was that, oh my gosh, if the earth should open up and this is all that I could find to represent, that somebody that looked like me or my relatives or my neighbors was this, that this would be a very sad and dejecting story.
She decided to start making the types of dolls that she wanted to see.
These were dolls that had an aspect, an element of character and dignity and grace and beauty, with lots of different vintage details and hand beading and lots of intricate work.
When Cosby first started her artistry, she thought only black women would be interested in her work, but that was not the case.
I've had white Southern women look at my dolls, and their intention was not even to stop. And then they would pause and they would really examine, and somehow or another, some little heartstring would be stirred, you know, in ways that they didn't anticipate, and wind up putting down a pretty good piece of money and say out loud that they are surprised by their reaction. And I think we are not a separate body, this human body, and we need the full range of our human story. And to be exposed to it, to be complete, that includes being exposed to people that may perhaps don't even look like us. People of color have always understood that because that's how we've navigated the world, by making a study of it and knowing how to move in the world that was not necessarily set up for us, except to be at the margins or to be at service. And so we've always had that awareness of other cultures and other ways of being. But I think that it's necessary and instructive that everybody have exposure to the entire human story and not just their little piece of the fabric or cloth in order to be complete.
I'm so excited to see this exhibit.
Oh, I'm so glad.
The Black Dolls exhibit dives into the mammy stereotype. called Deconstructing Dinah, it explores the racist caricatures of Black women on products like Aunt Dinah molasses and Aunt Jemima pancakes. These divorced from reality images reinforce the idea that Black women exist for the sole purpose of serving and nurturing white people rather than living their own fulfilling lives. The mammy tropes were often dark skin, plus size, maids, or nannies. One of the ways this exhibit tackles this stereotype is in a photo of a little white girl playing with a Black doll. Innocent enough, right? Except the Black doll is serving the little girl tea. Dominique says this shows that while white children in that period certainly played with Black dolls, they played with them in a different way compared to how Black children played with them.
Even in the course of play, that Black doll was often relegated to a service role. We can see that kids are understanding the world around them. They're receiving, and in some cases, playing out the scripts that they're learning in life, and the dolls and how they play with dolls are the first setting for how they're working out their place in the world.
She says putting a Black doll in the service position says a lot about what white children thought about the roles they were expected to play when they grew up, and roles that people who were different from them would be expected to play. And one thing that struck Dominique during the research for this exhibit was the intensity of the nostalgia for Black women to be happy to serve, a relic of the Lost Cause mythology.
There was a very popular movement to get a monument to the mammy put on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. These feelings ran very, very deep. This wasn't just individual people, well, I had a servant I loved very much, or I had an enslaved woman I loved very much, and I feel nostalgic for her specifically. This was an entire region who was saying the enslavement of and the fiction of someone who enjoys service above their own life and interests, that utter fantasy was so important for people to hold as real. They were writing poems and they were painting paintings and they were going to put up a monument. It's incredibly troubling.
Also troubling, or hard to look at rather, is one specific doll from the antebellum period.
It predates the end of slavery and depicts an enslaved man with a wire collar that was used to prevent people from running away, and it's stitched in fabric.
Something about seeing this tiny Black man in a metal collar stops you dead in your tracks.
It's violence. You do not think of a doll and violence together, but those metal collars, that's what they were designed to do, to violently restrict people from escaping. And even this like cuddly cloth object was still trafficking in those violence.
The doll was made by a woman who was an abolitionist. She was making a political statement against that kind of violence in the hopes of changing minds about slavery.
Seeing the connection that was being made between a commodity and a human being. You can make a doll and sell it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a piece of fabric. You can't do that to a human being. A human being is not an object. It's not a commodity. And the way that abolitionists in the time period, they were using dolls as a clear thing to draw a distinction away from a human being, which is not a thing. It's a person, and you can't buy it and sell it and treat it as property.
Considering women couldn't express themselves politically the way men could, Dominique says this was a cunning way of saying, even by doing the work we are relegated to, we can make a statement.
There's a great quote in the exhibition that we have up quite large, you know, may the points of our needles prick the conscience of slaveholders. And it's pretty remarkable to see how these women knew exactly what they were doing.
The use of dolls to make a political statement continued into the 1900s. Dominique says in that period, there was a close relationship between Black civil rights organizations like the NAACP, Black publications, and Black entrepreneurs, like Barry and Ross, a doll company founded by two Black women, Evelyn Barry and Victoria Ross, in 1918 in Harlem. These dolls, and specifically their advertising, sent a strong message.
It's not just, please buy a doll, we're trying to make money. There are political messages in those ads. Negro parents, buy Negro dolls for your Negro children, in their words at the time. These ads are encouraging people to think about their purchases as a political act. And this is well before the don't shop where you can't buy crusades that came about a little bit later. It is very clear that people in this time period are making a connection between what messages children receive and what parents can do to support the civil rights struggle, even right in their own homes with their own children.
The political nature of dolls continued in the 1940s with an experiment that used black and white dolls to study how children viewed race. It was called the Clark Doll Test, named after Kenneth and Mamie Clark, two black psychologists who were husband and wife. The experiment asked black children to identify dolls in a variety of ways, including good or bad. Most of the kids, despite being black, preferred the white dolls. Some would even run out of the room crying when asked to choose the doll that looked like them. The Clarks believed this represented psychological damage and self-hatred that was reinforced by segregation. This test was presented to the Supreme Court in the early 50s during the fight to end school segregation. When we come back, how that doll test continues to have an impact today.
If you enjoy learning about Chicago culture, WBBM's newest podcast, Shades of the City, is for you. Join me as I go into the community to hear from people like Dr. Margina Christian about the impact of Johnson Publishing Company.
It was the personification of pioneers working together with other African Americans, doing something that had never been done before, leaving a footprint for the world to see.
Subscribe early to Shades of the City podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Podcast.
Welcome back to Beyond Black History Month. I'm your host, Fahmy Redwood. In 2010, CNN did a segment featuring an updated doll test. Dr. Lisa Williams, who was a professor at the time, watched the segment while sitting on her couch.
They're asking these beautiful brown children, which doll do they want to play with? Now, I know what the answer of this study is going to be. I just know it because by this time we have a beautiful first lady in the White House.
This was during the Obama administration.
We have beautiful first children. We have celebrities that are on the cover of magazines being voted most beautiful in the world. So I know how this is going to turn out. Sadly, I was wrong. A beautiful black little girl said she did not want to play with a brown doll. And when they asked her why, it broke my heart to hear her say, because the black doll skin was nasty. And then she went on, which really broke my heart and brought tears to my eyes. She went on and touched her own hand as to indicate that her hand and her skin tone was nasty too.
Dr. Williams was so troubled by this, she left her successful career to start a doll company.
I knew that I had to do something so that this little girl could see her true beauty and her brilliance. And so that day, on my sofa, the world of EPI was started.
Her company makes multicultural dolls for both boys and girls, like one named Malik with braids passed to shoulders, another named Ebony with Afro puffs.
To know that when they're on the floor playing with a doll, they're seeing who they can be. I want them to aspire to live a life that is worthy of them, a life that's full of success and prosperity and joy.
But make no mistake, manufacturers charge more for diversity, as she found out in the early days of her company when she went to a factory in China. As she looked at the rows and rows of facial sculpts, the molds used to make a doll's face, she realized they would not work.
The children that were represented on those shelves did not look like any child that I see. The lips were a little European. I thought the nose was a little too pointed. I just didn't see in any of those sculpts what I see when I look at the faces of beautiful brown and black children.
She wanted a doll that authentically looked like the children she knew. However,
they were very adamant that they were not going to do a different doll for me.
The factory eventually agreed to make it for her, but she did have to pay extra. She thought back on that little girl in the CNN segment.
I could not give her something that's already been done. I couldn't give her just a doll face off of a shelf and paint it brown. That wasn't worthy of her.
And you can see that when you look at the dolls. For example, you know how sometimes you look at a black doll and it just looks gray and ashy? That is not the case here.
We put undertones in that skin. Some undertones have yellow, some are neutral, some have blue, all to represent really what our real skin tones look like. Our bodies are more representatives. All of us are not a size zero. Our bodies are fuller. Our thighs are fuller. Our waists are fuller. Our arms are more toned. All of those things really representing the authenticity.
And the hair.
In our community, we love our hair. We love our crown. And so I wanted to make sure whether it was our male dolls with braids or our female dolls with afros or braids or curly hair or wavy pattern, that that's represented.
Dolls, like many toys, are often gendered. But psychologists say little boys should also play with dolls because that can teach skills like nurturing and empathy. In addition, representation is important to all genders.
And I'm watching the news media and I'm thinking, why am I not seeing my son, my husband, my uncles? Why am I not seeing them reflected? Every time I hear something about Black males, typically it's something negative in the media. And I'm thinking, that's not the men that I know that are in my world. So I wanted to create a doll that empowered little boys so that when they look at a doll, they're like, oh, he has hair like mine. He has dreads like mine. And I want them, the little boy, to grow into a young man and see what they can become and not be ashamed of their beautiful, deep caramel or chocolate skin tone. Not be ashamed of their hair being naturally curly and naturally locked.
Parents understand why this is so valuable. And even if children can't put it into words, they feel it.
It's something to see children running up to the doll saying, mommy, mommy, look, she looks just like me. I had a little boy play with a doll and he said, look, he looks like my daddy. Oh, I thought I was going to just melt into nothing. That just touched my heart.
Historically, Black dolls reveal difficult truths, but as Dominique points out, they also signify childhood, pride, and life achievement.
One of the images that I was insistent we have in the exhibition was one by James Van Der Zee. He was an early Harlem photographer, but was also an early expert in kind of manipulating photographs, kind of doing early Photoshop. The photograph is a couple on their wedding day, and then what James Van Der Zee has kind of done is superimposed a ghost image of a little Black girl and a little Black doll.
A similar theme from Cosby, who describes Oprah's reaction after getting one of Cosby's handcrafted dolls as a gift.
He got this call from Oprah having received a doll, these dolls, and so ecstatic and delighted. She said both her and her staff, they were blown away. And she made it a point to tell me that this chair doll, that she would place it in her library underneath a painting that she had collected of a little Black girl holding a little white doll. Because that was what was available. And in her mind, this was a sense of like poetic justice, instead of like having marched on through time and to know that this was now available as a full expression.
Now available as a full expression. It wasn't always, but that's part of Dr. Williams' motivation.
There were those of our ancestors who were creating dolls, taking scraps of clothing and creating dolls to give their children some joy. And so it's such an honor to be able to take from my ancestors, stand on their shoulder, and on those on their shoulder, and on their shoulder.
And what shoulders to stand on to witness this much creativity by people who are bound by society's limitations.
It forces us to realize the kind of genius that's always buried when we aren't letting people live to the fullness of their capacity. There's this essay written by Alice Walker called In Search of Our Mother's Gardens. For so many women in this time period, they were tremendously talented, artistic people. And we don't have the record of much of what they created. Speaking about Alice Walker, we'll never see the gardens they tended. We'll never see the incredible hairstyles they crafted that no one was able to take a photograph of, or the beautiful meals they prepared with love for their families that, you know, we'll never taste. So much of their creative expression, their genius, the joy they take in creating, so much of that is just lost to us, lost to time. If it exists at all, it's in some of the stories we tell each other about those who have passed. But at least with these dolls, one of the things we get to see is some of what they created, some of their ingenuity.
And at a time where history is being debated, that seeing is believing. Museums are one of the few institutions still trusted by many.
More so than textbooks, more so than the internet, more so than the general public places the highest degree of trust to museums than any other historical medium. And I think one of the reasons for that is there's something undeniable about standing in a room with an artifact of the past. But at the end of the day, people are smart. If you give them the evidence, they can draw their informed conclusions. And that's part of the work of what a museum exhibition is. It's not, you know, let me tell you a story. Don't worry about my sources. It's here's the sources. You're part of the of deciding what the story is here. And so while I think it's a difficult time to be in the practice of helping people understand history, there's so many challenges to that. It helps that we're in the business of presenting the evidence and not just telling the story.
Thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying our Beyond Black History Month series, please subscribe. Beyond Black History Month is a production of 1010 Winds and WCBS News Radio 880. Special thanks to producers Robbie Gersoy and Andy Egan-Thorpe. Tim Scheld is the WCBS News Radio 880 brand manager. Ben Meverack is the 1010 Winds brand manager. And I'm Fami Redwood. Thanks for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.